Hey, you're listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast. This is episode 14, and today we're going to be hearing from the perspective of one of the first Canadian Asian pastors, what his journey of ministry has been like, and what he envisions is needed as we move forward. Let's do this! Hey, thanks so much for tuning in. Today, we are joined by Reverend Jonathan Kahn, and he's going to be sharing his journey about what it was like growing up in Asia, receiving Christ into his life, moving to Canada, and planting churches in Montreal, Toronto, and Ottawa. He's had this amazing journey, and now at over 90 years old, still has a sense of the heartbeat of Canadian Chinese churches and what is needed as they are moving forward. Big thanks to my dad who helped out with the translation and the dubbing. And so we're going to just jump right into the conversation.
Thank you, Reverend Kahn, for sharing with us today. We look forward to hearing a little bit about your journey. Would you share with us a little bit about your testimony, how you met God, and where did you hear the gospel, and when did you know that God has called you into ministry?
Well, I was an orphan from a very young age. I was raised by a missionary. I consider myself very lucky, but full of grace. All my grandparents were Christians, and my parents were also Christians, so I am a third generation Christian in my family.
Are you referring to the missionary couple?
Yeah, the missionary looked after me after my parents passed away. My elderly grandparents just could not look after me, so they sent me to an orphanage run by a missionary, Mr. Hitchker. Mr. Hitchker started his work in a small church near Kongqiao in China. And he later moved to Hong Kong, where he started the Hebron Church. Myself and two other older orphans learned about the Bible through his ministry, and we were given some opportunities to do evangelistic work. We moved to Hong Kong in the early 50s. You probably don't know much about that era.
We weren't even born yet.
Yeah, we weren't even born yet.
Yeah, Hong Kong was very unstable in the early 50s, and the population was fairly small. After my graduation from the Alliance Bible Institute in Changchow, there was very little work. Most of the missionaries who left China decided to go to places in South Asia, like Vietnam or the Philippines. I just decided to follow their steps and went to Vietnam.
When did you go to Vietnam?
That was 1952, right after I got married. My wife and I actually had our honeymoon there.
Oh yeah, my mom was actually born in Vietnam too.
Yeah. When we went to Vietnam, there was still a war there. But because we were from China and our background, we did not have much trouble getting there.
Were there a lot of Chinese people in Vietnam?
Over the years, there were lots of Chinese there. When we went, we first arrived in a town called Haiphong. It was a place where a lot of trades were taking place. Now, at that time, people could not go from Hong Kong to China directly, so they had to go to Vietnam and then enter China from Vietnam into the Yunnan province there. A lot of people moved through this area, but after the war, most Chinese left.
I know that a lot had left, including my mom.
Yeah, lots of people with connections were still around to do things. Vietnam began to break into two parts, North Vietnam and South Vietnam. The North part became communist. So from that point on, many Chinese people just decided to move to the South, either by plane, by train, or by boat, often with the help of the Americans. Our first child was not even one when we had to flee and move to South Vietnam.
That was Wilson, right?
Yes, yes, he was not even one when we left. We left Haiphong with 7,000 other people in a retrofit battleship. It took us 3 days to get to Saigon. We met someone from the church at the dock in Saigon and began our ministry work in that city. Although I really wanted to stay in Haiphong, but we had to flee because most people left already, and I was one of the last ones to leave.
Was it like the whole church has moved down to the south?
Oh, yes. Everyone was fleeing, and we lost touch with lots of them. Once we went to Saigon, we were able to meet up with a few, but not many. So we just started work there for 16 years after 2 years in Haiphong. The situation there was not good, and it deteriorated to a point where we decided to move to Canada.
When did you come to Canada?
It was 1971.
Was it in Toronto or Montreal?
We first moved to Montreal.
We're interested in what you saw in Canada and what was it like, especially in Montreal.
Well, Vietnam is very hot and Canada is cold. When we first arrived in January, there was a big snowstorm in Montreal within the first week. And it was actually one of their biggest storms ever. And we had to use snowmobiles to move around, and the police told people to stay inside. The city shut down for a few days.
This was when you first arrived? Did you want to go back?
Well, there was no way to go back.
How did you arrive to Canada? Was it through airplane? Was it through boat? How did you get here?
Well, a close friend in Vietnam and a fellow missionary from Hong Kong, Tit Mong Si, he told us to go to Canada. He was the one who organized everything, and it was just by verbal agreement, so we had to do a lot of work ourselves to get ready.
When you first arrived, how did you feel? Was it different? Was it strange?
Well, America and Canada did not have many new Chinese churches at that time. Most Christians met in fellowship groups, like school fellowships. I was brought in to help with the fellowship in Montreal, but my heart's passion was to build churches. The Alliance Church was very supportive of my role, and but the fellowship groups in Montreal had its challenges because of the difference in background. Now, some were Baptist, some spoke Chinese, some spoke Mandarin, and it was quite complicated. Yeah, so I was there for 1 year with that fellowship.
Was it church planting?
Well, we started a new Alliance Church in Montreal. That church is now into its third generation. Some of the original students are now grandparents. The work was tough because of the languages. Most people in Montreal spoke French, and all the Chinese who came to that city had an English background. Many just came to study.
Like McGill?
Yes, yes. Yeah, they They came to McGill, and after they finished studying, they moved out. Matthew Chiu from the Alliance Church in Toronto was actually a student from Montreal. Back then, there were lots of students who studied and left. So the work in Montreal was almost exclusively with the students.
So every 4 years, you have a new cycle of students.
Yeah, that's right. So the long-term prospect was not ideal because it was hard to establish churches when people just moved out. We then started to look for work outside of Montreal. The Alliance Church in Ottawa started from Montreal.
So what was happening in Toronto?
Well, we did not start working in Toronto until the 80s. Many in the CCACA wanted to start churches in Toronto, but few wanted to go there. I decided to volunteer and began work in that city from Montreal. So I just go down there, a few days at a time. And many thought that I was moving to a different turf.
I've never heard.
I started at the Scarborough Chinese Alliance Church with Simo, who worked very hard. After we established that church, we handed it over to someone else. We did not take a salary, and we did it all out of our own hearts. We asked for some gas money. We were able to stay with our daughter and our son-in-law in Toronto at that time, so that helped.
Is it Carl and Kit?
Yes, they were there. There was more opportunity in Toronto, and a lot of people just moved there from Montreal.
Is it the students that studied and then moved back?
Some, but not a whole lot.
When you first started church in Montreal, were there any racial tensions and discrimination that was happening?
Not really. The Chinese had a separate community from that of the Quebecois. So there was not a lot of problem in that sense. Quebec at that time was not very open to Christianity. And the Alliance Church actually considered it a mission field. Most of the churches there were small and needed funding support from the head office. So some of the churches there, they actually admire our growth. Currently, there are 7 Alliance churches, Chinese Alliance churches in Montreal.
Have you returned to Montreal recently?
Once in a while. If on a particular Sunday, we are in a good spirit and we have the energy, then we just drive to Montreal.
Yeah, Ottawa to Montreal isn't too far.
Yeah. Well, not too far. We still keep in touch with the churches there.
What would you say is the greatest differences in the Chinese church in Montreal when you first began to the church right now?
Oh, huge difference. We were renting everything when we started. We did not even have the hymnals. We had to borrow them and the Bibles from the fellowship groups. And, of course, we needed to rent spaces. The early days were not easy. We rented from a German Lutheran church. This was one of the first locations where we met. I just went to that church and just asked the pastor there to see if he would give us a room in the basement for prayer, for work with the Chinese people. They were very, very gracious. They told us that they would consider it, and within 2 days, they called us back and said, yeah, we could use the basement. And we used that space for 5 years.
Was that every Sunday afternoon?
Yes, we met there in the afternoon for 5 years. We started with the basement, and as the numbers grew, we went to the sanctuary. Now, of course, we had to be very careful with the space there because it was someone else's space. And it meant extra work for the janitor, especially in wintertime where he had to do a lot of cleanups. But the pastor was very nice, a great blessing to us. He came to Canada after World War II. He told me that in Canada, one of the biggest reflections that he had was how people of different ethnic and cultural backgrounds can live harmoniously together. That was definitely not the case in Germany, right? And he experienced a huge discrimination towards other cultures, especially towards the Jewish community. He wanted to help out other churches and cultures. So he had this great thought that he and his church would reach the Germans and we would reach the Chinese. So helping us was just helping kingdom work. This was such a blessing.
That is God's kingdom work.
Yes, of course, yes. So when we started a new building, the German congregation came to bless us, and they were part of the celebration. They also gave us a clock as a gift. When we used this space, they did not ask for any rent. We just gave them a free will offering. So, and of course, now as our numbers increased, we gave them more. So this was the mutual understanding.
It's so amazing that they were willing to give you that free space.
Well, this was back then. I'm sure things are different now.
Do you think that the gospel work was harder back then or now?
Well, it really depends on the people. There are hardships in every season, right? Back in those days, we reached the families one at a time. We actually go and visited the Chinese people. We go to their houses and visit them. Sometimes we would hold events and celebrations, and we would invite them. And when we meet new Chinese people, we would visit them.
So where did you find these people? Was it primarily in Chinatown?
When I first came, it was mainly in Chinatown, yes. We would go there regularly, and they were mainly Taiwanese, and we had to learn to speak Taiwanese. We had to learn about their business and build relationships with them. We also visited the school fellowships and be part of them. Some of those, we invited them to work with us.
Did you find that it was the students who had started the fellowship?
We did not start the fellowships. They were already there when we came. They were not affiliated with any churches. When these people arrived to Canada, they were already Christians, and they just tried to find fellowship. We went along with them and wanted to foster some relationship with them.
We have spoke about your children, Wilson, Dick, and Kit. We were wondering what your experience had been being a pastoral family.
Well, we live in poverty, and especially when we were in China. Okay, in China, you're never rich if you're a pastor. Sometimes at home, when things were tough, we would go home and vent out our hard feelings. At times, the pastors even wanted to stay away from the ministry. Our pastoral work affects our children, not just by what we say, but how they experience it. You can say that when they see how hard it is, They may not want to follow suit. The way I see it, if I can do my work happily and they can see how I enjoy my work, and if they want to follow suit, then they can follow.
This is quite amazing. Both your sons are part of ministry work, and also your daughter is married to a pastor as well. I was wondering, what do you think about the current situation of the Chinese Canadian churches?
I strongly believe in the English ministry, and I have written much about this topic. Today, the English ministry needs to be strengthened, and the Canadian Chinese people now are growing, and most of them are English-speaking. If that is the largest growing group of Chinese, then we need to invest more time and energy in them. If we do not do that, we are going to regret it. When the English-speaking Chinese get older, they will begin to leave. It's hard to capture why they leave and to where, but in Chinese churches today, we can see the different congregations with different languages, but they are all part of a branch, and someone else is in control. This is really limiting the growth of the church. Churches that have been around for 10 or 20 years, the English ministry should be growing and rising in population. But today, the English ministry is still very, very small. How can we bring birth to a Chinese-English ministry and cultivate strength in it? This is the most important area. The Mandarin movement is important, and we need to grow those areas as well. But that is pretty natural.
Do you find that Mandarin churches are harder to start?
Well, there are many Mandarin churches already, so there is already a good foundation in the Mandarin churches. I don't worry too much about that, but I do worry about the English churches. For example, John, you work in a Chinese church. You are a branch and not an individual body. You should be given some freedom to make decisions and lead the church. If you count the churches in Toronto, how many English-speaking Chinese churches can you name?
Only English-speaking? No, not many. We can count in one hand.
Yeah, that's right. And there has to be more. The English-speaking Chinese should be greater than the Cantonese and the Mandarin-speaking churches. There are children who had grown up in the church. This is a great challenge. And if we are not able to do this, then it will be a sad reality. In Ottawa, we see ethnic groups like Italians and Greeks. Their meetings are now in English. We can see that all they are speaking English, but they are also Italians and Greeks.
Perhaps at some point they had moved from the original language to English.
Well, it might have moved and changed early on. The Germans had a long history in Canada, so the Greeks and the Italians, and also the Coptic churches. There are many Coptic churches now, and they no longer speak Egyptian, but English. It is hard for us to find English-speaking Chinese churches. This is a weakness in the Chinese church. It would be a hard reality for the longevity of the Chinese church. We would lose them.
Would you say the future is the English church?
Let me put it this way. If the church is not able to cultivate the English Chinese community, then the future will not be good. It might even be a great loss.
Except for the growth in the English church, if you're looking at the future of the Chinese church, would there be any other things that we need to be aware of or cautious about?
There is a lack of homegrown ministry workers in the Chinese community. For the Mandarin-speaking people, some are starting to come out. Many have gone to seminaries. There are many who used to work in professional fields, but they have gone to seminaries and started long-term full-time ministries. In the Cantonese and the English side, this movement is much smaller. For the Cantonese churches, we still need to find pastors outside of the country, in places like Hong Kong. We are not able to cultivate leaders and pastors from within. How to cultivate and form pastors? Well, I speak very highly of the Montreal churches as they continue to build up and send out new pastors.
I think in Toronto, there's still this great flow of immigration. There's still so many families moving into Canada and especially into Toronto. You know, perhaps Chinese churches haven't really thought about the need for an English congregation or English pastors or what the future of the Chinese church might be like because a lot of the growth is still happening because of immigration. I think this makes a really interesting dynamic because of all the immigration. And there might not be too many churches thinking about the future and the need for an English pastor. And what does that mean for an English pastor to lead? I have a friend who speaks primarily English. He's Chinese. He's working at a church right now, and the church is considering whether or not to put him into the position of the senior pastor. But a lot of people have reservations because he doesn't speak Cantonese, or that's not his primary language. He doesn't minister in Cantonese. And so they have some concerns about that. What you have just mentioned is not really spoken a lot about in Chinese churches today.
Well, the churches need to have a fresh perspective. The pastors, elders, and deacons, they need to look forward into the future. And if they keep looking at today, then they won't go very far. For example, if locally born young people wants to be a pastor, it is quite natural that he would be an English pastor. That's just because of his strength in the language. We need to give him an English position so that he can take on that position. First, now being part of the Chinese church, and then he would be given the freedom so he can take the job independently. For example, John, now if you are to take the job independently, the leaders of your church need to cultivate this kind of thinking in order for that to happen. There is one thing in Ottawa that really frustrated me. About 6 or 7 years ago, I told the English minister that he needed to get the independence from the Chinese church. But the Chinese church kept saying that it was not ready, and they were not ready. And if they're not ready then, they are still not ready now. So it has been 7 years, and they're still not ready. So a lot of struggle and trials are happening today, but they were just not trying.
You're right. We do need to shift our paradigms.
Well, I have always said in Montreal, I really like what they have done. More than 25 years ago, we had a Mandarin-speaking pastor from Taiwan in our congregation. So we just created a congregation, you know, consistent people who spoke Mandarin, and we actually sent over some Mandarin-speaking people, but not fluently, not the Cantonese, but they could speak a little bit of Mandarin. So over 3 years, this congregation became a new church. And 4 or 5 years later, they purchased their first building. This became the second Montreal Chinese church. And it is now one of the largest Chinese Montreal Alliance churches with their own buildings. It started with 30 people, and it became an independent church. We now have more than 100 English-speaking people and many congregations, but they have no desire to become a church. There's always this dependency on the mother church. There should be a shifting and changing concept with independence so that they can become self-supporting and continue to add to the movement and growth. The Mandarin churches that I have mentioned earlier, they started another church. With a handful of people, we started new work. This is also happening in Ottawa Chinese Alliance Church. This is a style and way of ministry. In the English congregations, everybody is a professional, and they have good educations. But compared to the Cantonese and Mandarin churches, they have lots of opportunities. It is not their fault that they require, but they are not forming churches. But they require the encouragement and opportunities from the leadership. But they are always babying them. I think this is quite the reality of most churches now.
So Bernard and I both have kids, and so we really wonder what our kids are going to see when they look at the Chinese church when they grow older. Would they want to be a part of it? Would they want to be pastors in the Chinese church in a Canadian Chinese setting? Or would they rather not even consider it, or would they not want to follow in those footsteps?
We need to give them a vision. Otherwise, there's only reliance. Children should be taught to be independent. They should not be lingering in their parents' house. In the church, we have not been embracing this concept. This is not automatic. It needs to be taught. My analogy is with the eagles. The mother eagles teach baby eagles to fly. Even if they fall, they need to learn to fly. And this is only natural.
How did you learn about this concept? There are a lot of Chinese churches that do not share this same perspective.
Well, it's all about background, I guess. I have been part of a lot of churches, and I'm now 90 years old. With each church that I have started, I saw it as a field, and I let it grow, and I did my pastoral work there. When I moved to Australia for a 2-year missionary work, I started 4 churches. When I left, they were almost self-supporting. This is an amazing work of God. I started the first Chinese Alliance Church in Perth. Now, just in Sydney alone, there are more than 10 Chinese churches. It is about how you take care of your job and have this vision. of not afraid of anything, then you can go ahead. You have to trust the people whom you have share your work and let them help you. And over time, they should take over your job. In Montreal, in the Chinese Alliance Church, I am the first official retired pastor. In the Chinese churches in Canada, some pastors who are older than I am, but they are still not willing to retire. When I got to 65, I decided to retire that I could do other work. This is learning to entrust others. This is a philosophy of leadership. Others may not think like this, but I do.
I suppose it's like if you trust them, then you can let them go.
Well, you guys are young, and you can try this.
I just got one last question. You know, how do you work with others that do not share the same philosophy of ministry?
Well, since I did not have too many co-workers, usually just one or two at a time, they understood me. So they could learn from me, and that's why I could start my work. When I entrusted my co-pastors, others could see that, and the co-pastors looked like a Reverend Kant.
Are you saying that they understand your vision and take that vision on?
Oh, for sure. Yes. They needed to believe in themselves so they could now stand up and took on the job. I needed to protect them once in a while, of course. After I handed the job over to them, I needed to find ways to protect them. Now, people in the congregation might not see this person like Reverend Kant, and there may be lots of questions. I would work between them and help this person out. Let him go through the hard way.
Thank you for taking time to share with us your many years of wisdom. Do you have any last words of encouragement, especially for the Canadian Asian churches?
Well, I would continue to pray for you so that you will have a vision to grow the work of God, bigger than your position. Now, you are here today, but you need to advance it bigger. I started in Montreal, which was a closed area, and needed to go out so that new works could begin. So, may this be your desire as well, and God will be able to advance His work through you.
All right. Wow, that was an amazing story. I just want to unpack a little bit of what Reverend Khan said. And it's kind of sticking in my mind, this idea of why are there not more English-speaking Asian churches? Do you guys see that as a possibility? Do you feel that is it the direction certain churches are heading, that Asian churches in the future are going to be more English-speaking as they are here in Canada?
Well, there already are some in our area. I guess if you're just saying predominantly Asian, but if they would call themselves, we are this specific Asian church and they only speak English, like some for not healthy reasons, some church splits or,
sure.
or some that are more like you're in the room beside us and you are a separate church. I've seen that happen.
Right?
Across the parking lot.
But I think why it hasn't been happening as much, possibly to do with the, at least around Toronto, I can't speak to the rest of the that any church that has tried to do that in, I think, outside of Toronto, at least from what I've seen, and I've seen some in Vancouver that's been a little bit further on in immigration trend. Mm-hmm. Like, they have been more, they don't identify themselves as Chinese, as Asian church.
As an Asian church,
in particular. Like, they're trying to be more multicultural, more engaging, not just Asians.
Mm.
And that, like, great. That's a great thing. And then, but then I also find why it's not happening in Toronto in particular is at least our immigration trend is so much younger like still first gen, second gen, yeah, still happening here. And there's a control issue, I think, in terms of like, well, we don't really want to invest our resources that way in that. Let's start like an English speaking church and plant one or something like that. Like, I think I said this in another episode before, where for some Asian people, they think, oh, as long as our family is held together, four generations are worshiping together, this is like a beautiful image of the kingdom or something.
Right. You know, it's really interesting that Reverend Khan also said that. Is it at a time and place where second and third generation, in terms of that population, is greater than the first generation? And if so, does that require a shift in the way the church can look? You know, I'm still kind of unpacking those ideas in my head and thinking about, you know, could there be primarily second and third generation churches that are still speaking the language from their country of origin? Or would they be more English speaking? What does that mean for us to be an Asian church in Canada?
I think Reverend Khan also addresses more the power and the control issue. Like, he actually challenges about like the release of power and the release of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when power and control is released, the outcome could be very different.
Sure.
There could be a lot of English speaking Asian churches out there, more and more, if that happens. Or it could be more multicultural churches as well.
Yeah.
I don't think necessarily like either is the answer.
Right.
But what I gather is that like when we learn as churches to give up control and learn to be more generous, you know, back into our own city. Like, I know many Chinese churches and Asian churches as a whole, they're very generous in their missions giving overseas. And I think it's very powerful. But then like, what do we kind of invest that back into the city? And not just like in the financial matters, but like in the people matter, right? Like,
right.
And begin to like be generous with people. And I think like that's partially what Reverend Khan was kind of like engaging at too.
Hmm.
Like, how do we release people to start new things, right? Like, right. And he was always like, you know, if I train up somebody and just gonna like, I'm gonna leave him, let him do kind of his thing, and I'm gonna keep going, moving on. Like, which is very apostolic, but at the same time is very like he's giving away, you know, his power and his control.
Sure.
Yeah, but to think about that, my thoughts are many first gen leaders in the Asian church are not, one, not training up, not investing, mentoring, discipling,
mm-hmm.
in that kind of relationship. Most of them I find are not doing that because they're worried about Cantonese Mandarin kind of ministries or whatever that they're engaged into. But then secondly, it's like, of course, we would want that letting go of power, letting go of control to happen, but that requires faith. Ironically, yeah. You know, like, but there's some legacy issues that sometimes arises from that. There's like
fear.
Yeah, a fear, a genuine fear. And I think rightly so, maybe there's some next gen people who are just not mature enough, but that has to do with how much you'll invest in disciple and mentor them that way. Right, lead them towards that.
Yeah. Do you think that has kind of led to what we're seeing now as second generation, third generations are probably not leading more towards kind of an Asian church or Canadian Asian church, or more going toward a multicultural setting?
I think we have a mix. I think there are some that are more multicultural and others that are still comfortable. Like, whether, like, it's funny, sometimes I think we want the multicultural, but we end up being like monocultural.
Right.
And there's a difference, right? Like, there's a desire, but there's a reality.
Yeah.
I kind of have no doubts that probably all of second generation and third generation desire for a multicultural, but the reality is not.
Hmm. Really interesting thoughts. Some things for us to continue to wrestle with. Fantastic. All right, that's another episode for you guys. What did you guys think? Did you guys agree, disagree with Reverend Khan about what he's saying, about where the church is heading? Let us know your thoughts. You can connect with us through Facebook, through Twitter, through email. We'd love to hear from you. Also, let us know how we've been doing in this conversation and how we could be doing this better. Next episode, we'll be exploring the idea of how a church with multi-language congregations can come together
and be one unified church together. You don't want to miss it. We got our special friend, Jason Fan, the man, with us. Also, please remember to subscribe and rate and review our episodes. It really helps us out a lot to be able to get this podcast and this conversation out to more people. Please also check out our partners, New Leaf. They're doing some amazing work, especially in regards to church planting and resourcing churches. Check them out. Check out their podcast. Man, they've been such a blessing to us. Once again, you've been listening to the Canadian Asian Missional Podcast, and we hope you'll join us on this journey. See you next time.